Welcome to the sixth episode of the Frontend Greatness Podcast. My name is AP Koponen, and this is a podcast that helps developers go from good to great. My guest today is Jamon Holmgren. Jamon is the co-founder of Infinite Red, the best React Native agency in the world. He is also the maintainer of MobX State Tree and known in the Twitter sphere for his magnificent tractor photos. Hi, Jamon, and welcome to the show.
Hey, AP. Nice to be here. Thanks for having me on.
I see you have your Kubota cap on, so you're keeping the tractor image.
Right, yeah. My wife got me this hat, you know, for my birthday, or was it Christmas? I don't remember. But she got me a Kubota hat. That's the brand of tractor that I have. It's Kubota. It's a little tractor, but I love it.
I'm a little disappointed because I come from a family of farmers, and I was taught that Massey Ferguson is the best one.
Massey Ferguson. Yeah, you know what? I was actually looking at Massey Ferguson tractors before I bought my Kubota, and the 1705 was the one that I was looking at. It's a little tiny tractor. Not too bad in terms of cost, but I ended up finding this one, which was, you know, less expensive, even smaller than that one, fits my little property, which is about 3 acres. And so I figured, well, this is the tractor for me. So now I'm all in on Kubota.
Okay, fair enough. This is actually the first non-technical episode of the Frontend Greatness Podcast. And I'm really excited about that because going from good to great as a developer requires much more than just technical knowledge. You need to grow as a human being and also understand yourself better in order to level up. And today we will be talking about dealing with adversity and sisu. Sisu is a special word in the Finnish language. It is pretty close to the English language words grit, perseverance, resilience, fortitude. The best description for sisu I know is sisu is extraordinary determination, courage, and resoluteness in the face of extreme adversity. And when I asked Jamon in Twitter's DMs what he'd like to talk about, he immediately replied, sisu. So, Jamon, what does sisu mean to you?
Yeah, sisu. So, I am Finnish-American. I am actually in the process of learning Finnish, which is the Finnish language, which is kind of fun. My daughter is learning it as well. And AP and I have been conversing on Twitter in Finnish to some degree, helped a lot by Google Translate on my end, unfortunately, because I'm still pretty new to this. But I have known the word sisu for all of my life because my mom speaks Finnish, and you know, a lot of the people in my community are Finnish Americans, and sisu is a very important concept for Finns, as I understand it. In fact, when I went to Helsinki last year, or I guess it was 2019, April of 2019, so 2 years ago, one of the first words I saw on a sign as I was driving, we were driving away in a bus from the airport, was sisu. I saw a big sisu on the side of a building, and I was like, oh yeah, I guess I'm home. And the other thing I learned was that as much as we love saunas here in America, which, by the way, that is how you pronounce it, sauna, you don't say sauna, it is sauna, as much as we love them here, it doesn't compare to Finland. So I had to take some saunas when I was there. That was fun. But yeah, sisu. So sisu is, I've often seen it translated as grit. It doesn't quite have a proper English translation necessarily. To me, sisu is really more, a lot of people think of passion and they think of intense feelings and whatnot. The sisu is not that. Sisu is more about commitment, sticking to things through sometimes extreme and difficult times, through the tough parts of whatever you're doing. And it is something that, perseverance is another word for it. And the Finns have had to deal with this over many years, you know, with various wars that have happened where they're almost pretty much always the underdog. You know, Finland is a small country. It's not a particularly influential country in some ways. So they have to kind of have this ability to persevere. And it's also a cold country. It's northern. It's very cold there. So you have to, in order to survive over the years, the culture has evolved to be more like a lot of perseverance. And that's, I think, a really big thing. Now, some people might think, okay, well, is this kind of the same as hustle culture, you know, where it's like, you know, if you aren't grinding at 3 a.m., then your competitors are, type of a thing. It's not. That's not it at all. You know, I think that as we dive into this definition and what it means, people will see what the difference is. But you can totally have sisu in a 9-to-5 job with clear boundaries between your personal life and having rest and knowing the boundaries of your own physiology.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. I think, you know, even if you have a 9-to-5 job, you still have to deal with adversity. So I think, you know, from my perspective, of course, I live in Finland where the 37.5-hour week is the norm. From my perspective, the hustle culture is like, it can have the adverse effect of creating yourself more problems that you need to go through with sisu. And it's not always, you know, creating more adversities than you need is probably not the best strategy. But
yeah, that's a great point. Different... where the hustle culture actually creates more adversity than it solves.
That's a good picture of the Finnish culture. Like, there's this Finnish saying that I could like translate very freely. Like, in the beginning, there was a swamp, a John, and a hoe. Like the thing with which you make with which you
garden hoe.
Not something else. So
sure.
and like this is a picture of a Finnish person like coming to Finland, and you know, you have to make your own path in a country that is cold. And where you have only swamps, where you need to, you know, put your grain. Right. So, and like one of the best pictures of Finnish sisu, like from like, of course, the wars that we had, like we have this big country in the east that used to be called CCCP. So in the world wars, Finns fought off the CCCP, which is one of the biggest. Determined kind of like big things in our history, and also like Finland has been like ruled by the Swedish. Actually, Sweden used to be like a very big country
for several hundred years, right?
Yeah, they were a huge country.
Yeah, it's quite a long time.
So, in the Finnish kind of way of thinking, we've always been the people who show their fists at the big bad people who are, you know, putting down the underdog.
Yeah, sure,
but. But one of the like best pictures of sisu is actually from the 1972 Summer Olympics at Munich, and there was this Finnish long distance runner called Lasse Viren, and he was participating in the 10,000 meters final, and in the middle of the race he actually tripped and falls down, and you know, everyone else gets ahead, and probably, you know, everybody thought that his possibilities for getting a medal were flushed down the toilet right there. But however, he gets up, he starts running again. And in the end, he ends up winning Olympic gold with a world record time. So like this picture of a person who has been, you know, literally pushed down or tripped, and you're there like, you know, looking at your dreams that you're about to lose. But for some reason, from somewhere, you find this attitude that, okay, you know, I will overcome this adversity. So that's a picture of sisu.
Yeah, totally. And it can, you know, I mean, you don't have to necessarily be come from really extreme circumstances to have adversity. Everybody deals with it to some degree or another in their life. Certainly some people are more privileged than others. Some people come into things with with more of a support system. They come into it with, you know, just better all around life circumstances. And that can really, that is something that you have to think about in terms of this sort of perseverance or sisu, that not all people are starting from the same starting spot. But at the same time, no matter what, everybody will run into situations in their life where it really gets uncomfortable and it gets hard and it gets tough. And I feel like being a developer, this is something where we put ourselves in those situations quite a lot.
So what kind of adversities have you faced as a developer?
So when I started my business in 2005, I really was, I mean, by all accounts, maybe still you could call me a junior developer, even though I'd been coding since I was 12. I'd never done it professionally, really, except for a couple of little projects for friends. And so going from that to like, you know, hey, I'm going to sell website projects and I'm going to do websites and, you know, push them out there. I mean, for one thing, I'd never sold any projects. And then to code them up, like this was no longer a hobby. And my business partner, Todd Wirth, once said, the difference between a hobbyist and a professional is that a hobbyist can stop whenever anything gets too hard or uncomfortable. A professional is forced daily to get stuff done without regards to their comfort. They have to keep going. They're, you know, otherwise you don't get paid, right? And so that was the situation I found myself in 2005. I had a new baby. He was 6 months old. He just got his first job and has his own pickup and a driver's license and is off doing things now. But at that time, he was 6 months old. I had just gotten married a couple years prior. I had a new house with a mortgage. So I was in a position where I had a lot of expenses and I started this business. And I no longer had, you know, the option to blame someone else. It was just me. And especially when I would get these projects in that I didn't know how to do them. I had to figure it out. I had to figure out how to do them. And sometimes I would solve them in ways that wasn't very good. And sometimes I would find elegant ways to solve things. But, and it was a lot of long days for sure. I often would underestimate how long something would take because I'd never done it before. That seems to be a common thing with developers, underestimating how long something will take.
Yeah.
But you know, there's something about having, and I, now that I'm a boss, I've been an employer for many years now. Some of the employees that I appreciate the most are the ones that I can hand a project and know that it's going to get done. It may not get done fast, but it will get done at some point. They'll figure it out. And that was the position I was in at that time. Like I had to figure it out. There was no other option. It was either that or go send the money back. And then, you know, we don't have money for groceries.
Yeah. Yeah. That sort of, you know, you have your back against the wall can be very, very stressful for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And finding this sort of attitude that, I won't be put down, but rather I will overcome this is a mental strength. And I feel like I've been to pretty similar situations, maybe more from the perspective that I don't know, you know, my groceries were not so much in, you know, buying groceries for our family was not so much in the line. It has something to do with the fact that Finland has such a great,
this is true,
welfare system. So you always have something. You don't end up in the street. But my kind of pressure was more like my own, this sort of perfectionism. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I didn't want to fail in the projects. I had one particular like 2-year project, which was hard. I don't know if it ever should have been done. And if it was over my, you know, skill level at the time, I did learn a ton, but it was, you know, a very, very, hard project to kind of, and one of those projects where you think you get it done in 6 months, and then after 1.5 years, you're not still done. And you're like all the time feeling that, you know, I need to, you know, ship this. And then always something comes mm-hmm. in the way. And I think this is something that, you know, as a developer, you need to learn how to deal with, is that there are a lot of times when the adversities or the difficulties come from outside yourself, you know. Even if mm-hmm. you would be doing everything you can and putting all your mental effort, the project, you know, the company that you're working for, the project that you're working in might not, you know, just make it. It might not be worth doing. It might be, you know, someone has said at some point that, you know, it will be done with 100K or 10K or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, the reality is that sort of a project couldn't be done with that sort of a money, or then the stakeholders that you have to please are not, you know, at the top of their game. I know one particular project that, you know, was going on almost forever, and the team was, you know, very burnt out. And the reason was that the business stakeholder, you know, always kept on inventing new features or new things that need to be done before it can be shipped. Like there was no end to the work and no success in that sense. So that's a challenge.
Yeah, it very much is. And I remember one particular late night where I was trying to get something shipped, and I was doing PHP at the time, and the web page kept showing up completely blank, just white, nothing. And you look at source and there was no output, none whatsoever. And I worked on it for probably 4 hours until midnight or something like that. Now, again, I'm not advocating for hustle culture at all. This was just my situation at the time. I had to get it done. And I finally figured out there was an error, but I had errors suppressed for some reason. I don't know. I didn't at the time know how to even do that. So I don't know how that ended up being that way. Some library I brought in probably did it. And then when I unsuppressed the error, it told me exactly where the line was that was broken. And it was like a missing semicolon that I worked on for, you know, 4 hours. And so what those things really helped, you can look at them kind of negatively and you can say, this is, you know, this is crap. Like why do we have to deal with this? This is, you know, why I hate being a developer. This is why I hate code. This is why, you know, whatever. You could come up with all kinds of invective against this sort of thing. And it is true that these types of things can be very frustrating. But what that allowed me to do is it developed a very keen, what I call spidey sense, where you can kind of just sense like, oh, okay, something's wrong here. You know, there's something wrong here, and it's in this direction, or it's not in that direction. I know that, you know, or I at least have an idea of like what I can do to narrow this down, because I've been here and I've had this drilled into my brain. And if I had just known this technique, it would have saved me 4 hours of frustration. Those are the types of things where the lesson is really driven home into your brain. And if you stop and you just give up, you know, I didn't have anybody to go ask because I was working by myself. I didn't have anybody to say, hey, I can't figure this out, you know, solve it for me. Because I didn't have that and I just had to kind of push through, it became something that later became a superpower for me. Debugging is something I'm very good at now because I have spent the time with that frustration and had it drilled into my brain what, you know, like, what to do in these situations. It's not that they can't be frustrating. I even just recently had, you know, a kind of a similar thing happen where I was just working at something for a very long time, but I could feel myself, that spidey sense, kind of feeling myself getting closer to the solution as time went on. I was like, okay, I'm narrowing this down. This feels like I'm headed the right direction. And that's something I didn't have when I was early in my career. That was developed through a lot of, you know, kind of pain. But yeah, that's why I think Sisu is such an important concept for me, because I see what it did for me as a developer. If someone were to watch me code now, they would probably be like, wow, like, how did you know, you know, to go that direction? And it's just like, well, a lot of pain, a lot of, a lot of, you know, working through it at, you know, times when I didn't feel like doing that. And then it gave me shortcuts later that meant that I save pain in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. What you're telling, you know, it takes me back to one of my early memories when I remember having this feeling. It was actually my first job and actually the first company that I founded then, where I was working as an entrepreneur. And one night, I was just, you know, frustrated with the fact that, you know, I was very good at school all the way to mm-hmm. the university. And when you're at school, you can get an A or a 9 because mm-hmm. it's built so that if you just, you know, do your homework, study the things that you need to study, yeah. You'll do it. You can find the solution. Like all the examples have been given to you, so you need to piece them together to get the right solution. But when you go to work life, there is no one who is going to, you know, have your work curriculum. Like, this project is just super good for you and will hold your hand. Or maybe someone mm-hmm. has that experience, but that's very rare because it's very hard to kind of to find the perfect level for your developer work. Like, mm-hmm. what is yeah. this person able to do? And there are other things than technical that you need to take into consideration.
Yeah.
And the memory I had, I remember one night laying in bed and being very angry. Like, why, you know, I'm very talented. So why do I need to, you know, why can't I, you know, why do I need to, you know, just do this garbage? And it was like a point I remember, like, kind of realizing that in life, that's how it works. Like, you don't,
yeah.
you need, there are some things that you can only learn through experience. Like, yeah. it doesn't matter how smart you are. It doesn't matter, like, how good you're at learning. Some things yeah. you just can't learn without going through the learning experiences.
Yep.
And your, what do you call, a spider sense, like this sort of yeah. intuition, like expert's yeah. intuition. There's actually, like, yeah. I read one study where this the person who had done the study, it was about these very, very smart people, you know, who were at the top of their game in science and or in arts or in architecture or, you know, whatever, experts. And her kind of the result was in that study that, you know, all this, what we look at and see, like, in awe of that person is somehow, you know, super great. It's just this sort of intuition that they've gathered through yeah. living through kind of a life where they've been very interested in what they're doing. And yeah. the end result is just like this huge amount of intuition that helps them, like, see things that other people don't see and make connections and, you know, whatever right. their result is.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. And so, and that's something that, yeah, you gain that intuition. I like that as a way of describing that. You gain that through the process of doing this, but it's not just that too. It's also this sort of perseverance is something that makes you very valuable because it actually is somewhat rare. What I've found as I've gone through this, it's somewhat rare. There are a lot of people who would love to be software developers for kind of, you know, the salary or mm-hmm. for, maybe being recognized as kind of like a very smart person, et cetera. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. It's 100% valid direction to go. But if they lack the perseverance, the sisu, the grit to get through the tough parts, they're going to have a hard time in our industry because this industry is not easy. There's a lot about it that, like, and I'm specifically talking about the technical side of it right now, where there's just there in any stack that you might work in, there are all of these edge cases. This is a very complex field, technical field. It's very complex, and there's not necessarily always one right way to do any particular project because there are many different factors that play into this. And then so many things like environments can change. Third-party libraries can break your code. There was a conversation going on in the React Native Core chat that I'm in about how the latest master is broken because a dependency just broke something and it wasn't pinned. The version wasn't pinned. So, you know, they're having to kind of work through that right now. The people that are working on this particular release, 0.64. So these things pop up all the time. If it was just coding, if you could just code, then programming would be fantastic and fun and rewarding because you're just building stuff, right? So often you're doing things like trying to track down what dependency broke, why, you know, things won't compile, why things won't even run, you know, why Xcode is completely broken. It's just, you know, like these types of things are just constant. And so you have to have that intuition and the ability to work through it in order to get things done, ship it, to ship what you're trying to work on.
I'm
a big believer in it. And I've come to realize how rare it is. Now, I don't think that it can't be learned, but I do think some people probably have internal motivations that help with that. And then others, they have to work a little harder at kind of summoning that.
I think one of the things that require a lot of this sort of mental strength is a lot of things break when you didn't expect them to break, you know. And I'm a optimist when it comes to using time for tasks. So I'll be like, this will only take an hour. And then you run into something that you need to, you know, debug for whatever, 2 to 3 to 4 hours. And you have this constant feeling like, why do I need to spend time on this? You know, this is not what I was supposed to do. So you get these sort of things that come in the way. Another thing is also the fact that it's hard to do something that's, you know, perfect. It's probably, you know, like in some jobs, you have these standards and metrics and something you can, you know, just, you know, you just follow them and it's a good enough house. You know, someone can live in it. It fulfills the criteria. You can build a house that is, you know, perfect in that sense that you can walk out and be like, oh, I did a great house. But when you do development, at least my personality is such that when I look at, when I look back at my code, I'm almost like always seeing things that I could improve because now I know things better, but that's not something you have time for. So you kind of need to learn how to deal with this sort of imperfection and the fact that, you know, things are always in this sort of state that you can't feel that, you know, everything is now in perfect order. So how do you feel that, you know, like there, people have very different starting points to life. My my brother has this, I don't know, maybe brutal saying, but he says that the main job of a parent is to teach their children how to deal with disappointments in life. Or actually, the direct translation would be to cause cause disappointments to their children. so you know, but this sort of like this idea that that's one of the hardest things to, you know, you need to learn how to deal with disappointments in life. But not everyone has this, like they don't have the role models with a lot of sisu. They don't maybe have the upbringing or, you know, the environment where someone taught them how to deal with these negative emotions or whatever it takes to kind of overcome whatever adversity you're facing, whether it's code that doesn't work, whether it's workplace where the people have some sort of like where the organization isn't working, whatever it is where you need to kind of step up, go into like outside your comfort zone and, you know, be the person who goes like, oh, let's fix this. Now I'll fix this. I won't give up. So how can you learn, Sisu?
That's a very good point. And I did grow up with the benefit of having, my mom is very, Hanon Sisukas Nainen. That's a phrase that I have learned, a Finnish phrase. She is a woman with sisu. She's always very, very kind of positive, and in, you know, tough situations, she just, you know, kind of keeps rolling through, and she keeps a positive outlook on life. Very much, you know, my mom has an amazing demeanor about her, and she is where most of the Finnish in me comes from, I guess. So that makes sense. My dad is also that way, even though he's Norwegian. Don't hold that against him, AP, but he's more from a Norwegian family, but he ran his own business for many years. He just retired from 39 years as a pastor, which brings plenty of really tough, you know, situations. Just yesterday, actually, he just retired. And so I worked with him in the summers. He owned an excavation company, and I would work with him. And, you know, he was just like, you know, we're going to get this done, and you're going to get this done, Jamin. Yeah. You're going to get this done. You know, like there wasn't any, like, can you get this done? It was just, you're going to get this done. And I would go out and I would do it, because that was the expectation. And that's what I did. And so I did have the benefit of having parents that kind of, you know, modeled that for sure. But I think that anybody can learn it. I think that the big thing is you need to understand what motivates you to start with.
100%.
Yeah. What motivates you? And it's okay if it's literally like external validation from people. It's okay. There's nothing wrong with wanting recognition for your work. There's nothing wrong with wanting to be seen as an expert. There's nothing wrong with anything sort of on those extrinsic levels. The problem with that is you give other people more power over, you know, what, you know, your motivation when you do that. And sometimes people will disappoint you and they will not react the way that you want them to. Mm. Intrinsic can be maybe more consistent in some ways, where it's something where you internally think, I really want to make this work. I really want to achieve this. But not everybody's motivated the same way. And so you have to figure out what does motivate you. For me, partly it's like, I have a bit of part of me that's like, I don't want to disappoint people. And so if there are people who are relying on me to do something, I get it done. You know, it just happens. Mm. I also have a strong sense of responsibility to my company, to my family, those types of things. And so I use that as motivation. And, you know, I love coding. I absolutely love coding. I've been doing it since I was 12. It's something that still hits the right parts of my brain, makes me feel amazing when I figure something out. And I don't really get too frustrated too easily. So that is something I lean into. But if you are someone who does get frustrated easily, who tends to want to just give up, you do have to find what motivates you and lean into that as much as you can. Now, I do think that some people will have a tougher time with this than others, for sure. But it is something that I've seen people who are in extraordinarily kind of hard situations where kind of everything's working against them, making them want to quit, where they haven't and they've gotten through it. And I have huge respect for those people, you know, and that can include things like maybe they struggle with ADHD, where that can be a big barrier. I've never been diagnosed with ADHD. I think I have a bit of it just based on, you know, online polls or surveys or whatever that kind of give you a non-scientific thing. But I think I have a little bit of that just based on some of my characteristics. And so I totally understand why, you know, like losing interest halfway through something happens. That happens to me too. But I also have over the years found that, like, okay, I'm feeling this sort of like disinterest, want to move on type of a feeling, which probably means if I spend another couple hours on this, I'm going to hit another point where I become interested again. So let's just go ahead and spend those 2 hours. And let's see what happens. And it almost always works. Like, oh, wow, I found something else that's really interesting about this. And then I move forward from there. I just have, you know, kind of learned myself. And I think that that's a piece of this as well. Just learning yourself and how you react to things, and then putting yourself in positions where the right parts of your brain are activated and start kind of fueling the fire. A good example, non-coding example of this is if I want to clean out my garage, okay? It doesn't sound fun right now as I'm sitting in this chair. It doesn't sound fun at all. But I know if I go down there, put on some music, or maybe put on, like, I've got a TV on the wall in my garage. So maybe put that TV on with like something on Twitch or YouTube or something. I play Age of Empires 2, so maybe put a pro gamer on playing that, that I can kind of check out, and then just start sorting one shelf. Just start organizing that one shelf.
Yeah.
Still doesn't sound fun to me, but I know exactly what happens, especially if I have a cup of coffee too. I'm going to get in the zone, and that whole garage is going to get cleaned. Like, it's going to happen, because I just, every time I do it, that's what happens. And so you kind of learn what will get you in that mode to get through these things.
Yeah.
And those are some ideas. I think others will probably have other ideas. They come from different perspectives, but that's you know, just knowing yourself is really important.
Yeah, I can attest to that. Stephen Rice has a theory of 16 basic desires, which deals with this sort of internal motivation. I don't actually believe that those 16 basic desires are, you know, the perfect encapsulation of human desires and motivations, like, as a whole. But 16 is a large enough list for you to realize that I'm motivated by different stuff than the other people. There are a lot of people I know who live this sort of a life that they look to others and they're like wondering, why am I not like that person? And they're like, why am I not doing the stuff that those people are doing, achieving the same things? And they never get into this point where they kind of realize that, hey, that's not, you know, I'm not motivated enough to do that stuff. I need to find the things that I like. So I'll just, you know, read out the list, so, you know, kind of get a picture of what this could be. He has a list of these desires: that power, independence, curiosity, acceptance, order, saving. This is a big for me. Honor, idealism, social contact, family, status, vengeance, romance, eating, physical exercise, and tranquility. So, you know, there's a big list, and those are from, like, someone might, you know, have a need for power, and it doesn't need to be a bad thing. Like, there are people who enjoy having an impact in the world, and that is, you know, that's power. But you can have a desire to do it in order to advance and help people, you know, advance the world and help other people, or then you can have a desire for power in order to, you know, get everything to yourself or something. So there are differences to this, but none of these desires are bad, and you need to kind of realize that what motivates you. So I'm a big fan of you know, finding your intrinsic motivation. There's actually another theory that I really like, you know, which is the theory of self-determination. Like, some people think that, like, they have a very, like, this sort of a picture of people that there's these punishments and rewards, and people then react to them, you know, that people are, you know, some dogs or monkeys that, you know, aimlessly react to whatever you've given them. And we probably know that dogs and monkeys even, you know, don't do that all the time. They have, you know, their own wishes. But, you know, and the point in this theory is that if there are certain things that are fulfilled in your life, you will start working as an agent instead of being passive. And this has been big for me in work life, because every now and then I start feeling like I'm losing my grip. I'm not being an agent in the workplace. Yeah. I'm not caring about the project. I'm just working here. And usually when I get into this situation, I start with this theory of self-determination. So there are three aspects. First of them is autonomy. Mm-hmm. So it means that people have enough control on their surrounding environment, and they feel that they can, you know, work based on their intrinsic motivation. So they feel that they can work on something on their own terms that they like. And then there's competence, which is that you either have feelings of success, so you're successful in your job, or that you have feeling that you're learning new things. So this feeling that, okay, I'm going forward, I'm getting better at life, or, you know, whatever. And then there is relatedness, which is the connection to other people. I care about the other people, they care about me, I can be myself to the extent that I feel that I, you know, need to be. And usually when I go to these three things and try to kind of think about where I'm now, I usually find one of them.
Yeah.
Or, you know, maybe two of them. And I feel like, okay, you know, how could I improve this? And it might be that I need to have a discussion with my manager, with someone in the company, with some other person in my team that we, you know, I stop feeling like, you know, they're being an ass. Mm-hmm. It might be that I've outgrown my position, you know, mm-hmm. that the job that I'm doing is just too boring. Or yeah. It might be that someone has, you know, stepped into my territory mm-hmm. and is not respecting my expertise. And you know, I need to work yeah. through that. And there are like different levels between different people. I'm big on autonomy. I have this sort of like, I can't live without, you know, knowing why I'm doing what I'm doing.
I suspect we're similar in that. I guess being an entrepreneur means that I haven't had a boss for a very long time. And I'm big on respect. If people, I don't react super well when people don't respect my, I guess, expertise and what I bring to the table. And that's something that I've definitely kind of learned about myself. And every person has different, you know, different motivations and stuff. One thing, another, I think, way that you can help your perseverance and your grit and your sisu is to, we have a saying at Infinite Red, don't do hard things alone.
Mm.
So you run into a situation where you're starting to feel a little hopeless. Like this is really tough. Get someone in there with you just to look at the problem shoulder to shoulder. Let's both look at this, you know, in Zoom, let's pair on it. You know, can you kind of like validate to me that the steps that I just took are a reasonable bunch of steps that didn't work, you know, like yeah. I'm not just yeah. completely out of my mind here, but this is actually something where you did the right thing type of thing. And I love jumping in with my devs when they're having a problem. And sometimes I have some insight that can help them. Sometimes I'm just support. And I'm like, you know what? This is tough. This is a hard one. And I'm with you. This is not an easy thing to figure out. The other day, one of my developers, Derek, jumped into a Zoom with me and said, hey, I got this weird TypeScript issue where like it's not accepting the input that I'm giving it. It's supposed to be a string and I'm giving it a string and it's telling me that I'm not giving it the right thing. And we figured it out. It was a situation where we needed to use as const to tell it that this string is, if it's the enum that we were, or the union type, I guess, that we were giving it as a type. But the first thing I did when I looked at it was like, that is weird. I don't know if I've seen this before, you know, like validating to him that this is not something that he's just, you know, like some blockage, even if it is like, you know, oh, you know, Derek, this, we can fix this, you know, like, regardless, having another person there just to look at it and figure it out is huge. So I'm a big believer in don't do hard things alone. So, you know, bring some along to look at it, ask on Twitter, say, hey, does anybody have 5-10 minutes? It's never 5-10 minutes. Does anybody have a half hour to look at this problem and tell me if I'm just completely, you know, blowing this up and out of proportion? Is there something small I'm missing? Whatever. That can be a big thing too. And it can be very motivating to have someone with you who's like, yeah, no, okay. Yeah. You're headed the right direction. Like keep going that way. You're going to figure it out.
Yeah. I think that's a very good point. So Sisu is not, you know, and it's not about doing things on your own,
mm-hmm. right.
asking help, knowing when to ask help. And that actually takes a lot of sisu. I would say that, you know,
you
got to have sisu to go to someone else and say, I need your help to kind of have this ability to admit that I don't know everything. Yeah. And I've noticed that, especially when working with junior developers who are at the mm-hmm. beginning of their career, a lot of them may be kind of feeling that they're, you know, losing their face or something, and then they've been debugging something for 4 hours, and then they only come to ask for help. In one project that I led, I had this like, I tried to enforce a rule: if you're stuck for 30 minutes, please ask for help. It usually means that someone would be able to help you. So that's a big thing. One other thing that relates to what you spoke about ADHD.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this sort of going through hard stuff in life. I think Sisu is also, like, one big thing about how to learn Sisu is the fact that how do you look at the situations when you've had to go through hard patches? Are you mm-hmm. willing to see them as something that, you know, even though they were not nice, they might not have been something that should have, you know, you should have faced? Mm-hmm. Are you willing to kind of look at them and see that, okay, they were something that helped me grow? Or are you, you know, willing to see something good in them?
Yeah.
Of course, I come from a very, very privileged position, especially like being a white male living in Finland. Mm-hmm. But like just like a small, very, very like everyday example has been like my wife hasn't been so great at school as mm-hmm. I have been. So she has had to learn how to learn. So, you know, she hasn't been able to pick things up just by, you know, she has had to work like this sort of like when she has learned new languages, she has all sorts of she might draw a picture of a word and have this sort of like this certain like she had this very interesting strategies for learning things that were hard for her.
Yeah.
And when we went to the same university with her, in the first year she got better grades than I. And it was very hard for me because I was mm-hmm. used to being the, you know, the smart boy.
Yeah.
And the reason was that she had like this very, very good, she had learned how to learn. And we were studying mm-hmm. like ancient Greek and stuff like that, which was really, really hard from my perspective. And she yeah. had like better strategies. And the reason she had them was because she had problems with learning. And mm-hmm. so she ended up being better at learning than I, who you know, it was easy for me.
I agree with that. There was, so I was someone who kind of coasted through school because it was easy. And I mostly got A's on pretty much everything without even trying. I did get I got a C in German too, because the German teacher expected you to study on your own. And I didn't have the habit of studying on my own because I could pretty much ace every test and learn things in classroom that were enough. I'd pick it up the first time. I didn't have to like study it. It was already there. And German isn't that way. Like, you know, vocabulary, you don't just pick it up the first time what potato mm-hmm. is, you know, like yeah. you have to go study it. And then he would do these quizzes right at the beginning of the class. So I couldn't like sneak in some study right at the beginning of the class. And yeah, I got a C there. So that was just a kind of a wake up call. Like, yeah, you can't just skate through. And then I did one semester of college. It was a little more challenging and I learned a little bit better. But I didn't actually learn how to study until much later in my career. I often had the opinion, well, I'll figure it out, and just kind of diving in. And now I'm getting to the point where, I mean, probably a year ago, we went skiing and I'd never been skiing before. And normally what I do is I just strap on some skis and see what happened as I went down the hill. That's a dumb idea. Like, you know, maybe you should do a little bit of planning or maybe get some lessons or something. I actually went and watched as many YouTube videos as I could of skiing for beginners, just like one right after another, probably like 3 hours of YouTube videos. And I didn't fall once when we went skiing. I never fell. Like, we went down some pretty challenging hills for me. My wife is amazing. She just kind of floats like a butterfly down the mountain, but I'm just plowing down after her, you know? And, but I didn't fall because I knew the techniques and it gave me the confidence and stuff. So this is something that's been a little more recent for me, this idea that maybe I can learn something from other people. There, you know, like, I feel like it's a process of learning, all the way through, and having some Sisu gives you the opportunities to have those learning moments.
Read the F-ing manual.
Yes.
RTFM. And also, you know, it takes humility. And that's something that I've also been learning when I went to the gym or started going to the gym again. I had a personal trainer, you know, go through the things with me and not go there like, I know how to do this. I actually read the manuals on pretty much everything I get, which I used to think was stupid. And, you know, this sort of getting help from the people who actually know.
I did too. I did too. I totally was the same way. I wouldn't read manuals, like just hit buttons and see what happens is kind of the way I looked at it. And my wife is the type where she'll read the entire manual from cover to cover. And there were far too many situations where she would be like, well, why are you doing it that way? Just do it the way the manual tells you. It's easier. And I finally got to where I was like, you know, maybe there is some value here. And I would go read. I have had, you know, situations where the manuals have not been helpful. And that can kind of put you off. Mm-hmm. But more often than not, they put things in there that are like, hey, this is how you operate this. And it can be very good. I didn't have a personal trainer, but I had the opportunity to work out with one of my employees who works somewhere else now, but we're still good, really good friends. And he taught me a ton about lifting because he was a certified professional or certified trainer of some sort, as well as a developer. And that was also a big thing. And there was a lot of perseverance that had to happen there as well, because there's everything is telling me just give up. You know, it's working out is not fun. It's not, you know, something that really I enjoy, but you know, staying after it gets results.
Yeah. Going to the gym and realizing that this is something that you have to learn and you have to do a thing, something like 1,000 times to, you know, and it can get better after, you know, you've done it 1,000 times. You can, you know, get better is something that I've realized. And I think that's something that also relates to Sisu. Like, sometimes you just need to do something for the 1,000th time until you get it right. And sometimes there is no other way. And that's how you have to do it. Awesome. So I think now is a good time to wrap up. And the last question that I ask in every episode is that what resources would you recommend to a front-end developer who wants to go from good to great? So what are your recommendations?
I really like the book, The Culture Code by Daniel Coyle. That's a fantastic book that really gives you a sense of how organizations work best. And you can kind of, there's a lot of information in there about collaboration and how to best kind of optimize teams for great work. Because I do think that, you know, one of our pillars at Infinite Red is collaborative creativity. We didn't just put creativity because we feel that collaborative creativity is the best, the type where you work together and you direct your collective brain power towards something. I think one of the most damaging phrases that has happened or like become popular is design by committee. I actually think design by committee is an amazing way to do design as long as it's done right. Because there are some really, you know, there's some really amazing things that can come out of a committee versus one lone genius trying to, you know, impress everybody. So I'm a big fan of The Culture Code. I recommend people read it.
Okay. Great. Thank you, Jaimon, for joining me. And thanks to everyone who listened to this podcast. And we'll see you again in 2 weeks.